The truth is, I spend a lot of time underground. These gray concrete walls, the strip lighting, the antiseptic scent of the infirmary, they're home to me. They're where I feel comfortable. It's not so different in the holding cells. My 12th grade teacher once told me, we don't regret the things we do in life. It's the things we don't do that haunt us. And she was right. I have no regrets about what I did. It's not the first time I've disobeyed orders, after all. No, it's what I didn't do, what I didn't have the courage to do, that glitters on the road ahead like lost promises. When General Hammond offered me the chance to take a team to Lamora, I leapt at the opportunity. We'd all heard about Lamora, of course, as soon as SG-1 returned from their first mission. It was a society much like our own, a world divided between extreme wealth and extreme poverty. One nation, the Commonwealth of Brasivia, had advanced to the point of developing spaceflight, while the entire continent of the Valini Confederation was mired in poverty and violence. It was a horribly familiar situation. Within the constraints of our standing orders, we decided to help. While SG-1 negotiated for access to the Brasivi space technology, I took a team to Valini to establish a relief effort. In all, I was there for 9 days, setting up feeding programs, vaccination programs, and maternal health programs. My team would still be there now if, well, events hadn't taken a different course. When the Prometheus returned to the SGC, I went with it. After more than a week on my feet, I was exhausted, and the cramped cabin seemed like luxury. I didn't even bother to change out of my fatigues before I hit the sack. I was asleep 5 minutes after the door closed. That's probably why I didn't notice anything, until the sirens started wailing. Adrenaline fired like a gunshot, and I was out the door and heading for the bridge before I knew I was awake. The ship lurched, sending me slamming into the wall, and suddenly the corridor was full of smoke. I kept to the wall, but it was dark and difficult to stay oriented. Up ahead, something was shorting out. I could see sparks through the smoke and smelled the dangerous scent of ozone. Suddenly a white flash lit up the whole corridor, and a man stood before me. A cloth was tied across his mouth and nose, heavy-duty weapon in one hand. He looked me up and down urgently.
You're the doctor from the Valini camp?
Yes. Well, wait a minute. But it was too late. He grabbed my arm, snapped something about my wrist. What is that? He ignored me, talking into the band around his own wrist.
Execute! Execute!
I felt a brief moment of sheer panic, and then a silent, gray falling through mist until I hit the deck. Literally. I felt as if I'd been turned upside down and shaken. Hard. Perhaps I had.
Sorry about that, Doc. It's rough the first few times.
What? Wait a minute. What was that? I tried to push myself onto my hands and knees, but either my head or the universe was spinning too fast because I fell again. What did you do to me?
We need a doctor.
Prying open one eye, I could see the back of the man's head. He was sitting down, and beyond him... Oh, boy. Beyond him, stretched out like a painting, was the Prometheus in all her glory. As I watched, the man's hands darted across the controls, and our ship began to bank away. My stomach lurched. Streaks of weapons fire raced past the window, but either the ship was shielded or their aim was off because nothing touched us.
You should probably hold on to something. The inertial dampeners aren't up to much.
And with that, we were gone. The trip was rough, like flying an airplane through a hurricane. My abductor cursed and muttered as he fought the controls, and I sat braced against the bulkhead in the back. Stars slurred and danced past the window, and I found it better to just close my eyes until... Oh, what was that?
Don't worry about it.
Opening my eyes, I looked out and saw... Asteroids?
Tabor's Belt. Great place to hide. Hang on.
We pitched and dived, braced in the back of the tiny ship. I thought I was going to lose my lunch as we hurtled through the asteroid field. And then, at last, the ship leveled off and I climbed shakily to my feet. Wait a minute, just who are you? Where are you taking me?
To the savannah.
Where? He turned around then, and for the first time, I got a really good look at him. The scarf he'd worn across his nose and mouth was slumped about his throat, and his face was grubby with smoke. From beneath a fall of unkempt hair, he watched me with a dark and guarded expression. Yet there was a little glint of pride in his eyes when he spoke.
Savannah's my ship. Fastest out of Lemora.
If she's the fastest, why is she hiding in the middle of an asteroid belt?
Told you. We need a doctor.
And you always just take what you need?
Sometimes it's the only way.
Yeah. Well, my people will come looking. They won't give up, and they will not let you...
We just need a damn doctor. It's not... You don't understand.
You're right, I don't. Are your people sick?
When we get there, you know.
Look, it would be helpful if
I said you'll know when we get there. No more questions. Sit down. We're about to dock.
As it turned out, docking was a process that involved flying full tilt into a landing bay and then slamming on the brakes and performing a handbrake turn that had me once more plastered to the bulkhead. My captor seemed unfazed and flashed me a wicked grin as he stood up.
A little too hard and fast for you, Doc.
I glared, but stayed silent as I scrambled to my feet and watched him hit a control panel, opening a hatch at the side of the ship. He headed out, loose-limbed, confident. And when I peered out after him, I saw that he was waiting for me at the bottom of a small ramp.
Welcome to the Savannah, Doctor.
I suppose I could have refused to cooperate. But above anything else, I'm a doctor and I go where I'm needed. The patient, whoever they might be, comes first. I stopped at the head of the ramp. I'm Dr. Janet Fraser. Can I at least know your name?
Luca. Captain Luca Beash. This is my crew.
Behind him stood a ragged collection of people. Men and women in an eclectic mix of clothing, marked with the surly mistrust I'd seen in the eyes of dispossessed peoples across the galaxy. They were wanderers and rebels, and they had no time for officials like me. At least, not until they needed a doctor. Are you from the planet? From Lemora?
We're from the Savannah. Free spirits and free traders all.
Thieves, then?
Only when the situation requires.
As it seems to now. You know, if you'd asked for my help, Captain Beash, I would have given it freely.
Would you now? Your patient's this way. Come on.
With that, he turned and stalked across the docking bay, the flutter of his threadbare coat adding a flourish to his stride. With a glance at his hard-eyed, watchful crew, I followed the captain into the heart of his ship. The Savannah was nothing like the Prometheus. In fact, it reminded me of a submarine with its narrow corridors and low ceilings. Here and there it showed signs of damage, wires and cabling exposed, and quick fixes made on the run. But this was no military ship, despite its austerity. Paintings in bright reds and greens trailed across the walls, and I recognized leaves and trees in patterns that decorated the many small doors. Lucas stopped outside one such door and ran a hand through his hair. For the first time since my abduction, he looked uncertain.
This wasn't our fault. We didn't mean this to happen.
You'd better show me. He hesitated a moment longer, then reached out and opened the door. Inside, the lights were dimmed, but I could make out two figures. A woman sat on a chair next to a narrow cot, on which lay a slender child of about 8 or maybe 9 years old. His breathing was sharp, too fast and shallow. The woman rose to her feet as we entered, her gaze darting between Luca and myself.
Go now, Eva. We have a doctor.
The woman cast me a skeptical look as she squeezed past us and left the room. Carefully, I took her place at the boy's side and lifted my hand to his forehead. He was burning up. Okay, so tell me what happened.
There was a fight. He was shot.
How long ago?
Some days ago now. We lost our doctor.
Lost?
He died.
I pressed my fingers to the boy's neck and felt his labored pulse. He was unresponsive, fevered. The wound was probably infected. He needs to be in hospital.
That's why you're here.
In the dimly lit room, I could see nothing but shadows and secrets in Luca's face. I don't have any equipment with me.
We have medical stuff. Use that.
Look, your medicine will be entirely different to my own. I couldn't possibly guess how to administer your doctor's drugs. But I'm telling you, this boy needs to be in hospital now.
And I'm telling you, that won't happen.
For a long moment, I just stared at him, tried to read the truth in his face, but it was like looking into a smoked mirror. I got absolutely nothing back. Okay, I need more light. I need clean water, fresh bandages, and all your doctor's supplies.
Thank you. I know...
Don't you dare thank me. I'll do what I can for the child because he needs my help, but you have brought me here against my will, and now you're ignoring my best advice as a doctor. This boy's life is in your hands, Captain.
Not just my hands. Save him. Everything depends on it.
I'd have given my right arm for a field kit, but a good doctor never forgets her basics, and it was back to basics I had to go. The initial examination revealed dehydration and a deep burn to his right thigh. As I'd already suspected, it was showing signs of infection. That explained the fever, but not his semi-conscious state. Rolling up my sleeves, I started a physical exam, running my hands lightly over his limbs and torso, looking for other wounds. When I touched his soft black hair just above his right ear, I found it. A large contusion. Carefully, I peeled open his eyelids. Without my penlight, I couldn't check properly for pupil response, but his gaze was slightly deviated. Damn it. Behind me, someone coughed. It was the woman, Eva, who had been sitting with the boy earlier. In her hand, she held a box, balanced on top of which was a black bag, a medical bag, I hoped. "The captain asked me to bring you this," she said. Her voice was soft, lilting, with an accent I recognized from my time in Vellini. She looked about 25 years old, though, slender as a teenager. I offered a smile. "Thank you. Perhaps you could help me try to understand some of your medicines." With a nod, she put the box down. Her gaze darted toward the boy. "Will he be okay?" "He needs a hospital," I said, "but I'll do what I can." After a moment, I asked, "Is he your brother?" Eva shook her head, guarded once more. "I don't know anything about medicine," she said, rummaging through the box. I don't think I can help you." I sighed, crouching down next to her. The box was full of packets and bottles. I mean, they could have been bought from a candy store, for all I knew. At this point, I said, "You know way more than me, so let's just see how far we can get, okay?" After an hour, I'd managed to identify what I hoped was an antibiotic and a topical analgesic. My greatest discovery, however, was an infusion set. Not exactly like those we use at home, but close enough that I could identify the equipment and how to use it. For the first time since I'd seen the boy, I thought that I might be able to do something to help him. At least until I could talk the captain into getting him proper medical care. I sent Eva in search of water to clean the boy's wound and set about administering IV fluids. I was just taping the catheter to the back of his hand when I heard footsteps slowing outside the cabin. I knew it wasn't Eva returning.
How is he?
He's very sick. Like I told you, he needs a hospital.
If I could take him to a hospital, I would.
Lucas stood leaning in the doorway, his gaze fixed on the boy. He'd cleaned the grime from his face, but it only made his eyes look darker. He seemed hesitant to enter, however, and I wondered if he blamed himself for what had happened to the boy. After a moment, I said, "Could you help me with this?"
"Help you?"
"With the fluids. Hold this bag up while I connect it to the catheter in his hand." He stepped cautiously into the room and took the fluid bag. He wasn't as tall as I'd initially thought, and he was slender, like Eva, like all the people of Vellini. He would have looked young had his eyes not seemed so very weary. "Okay, just hold it here, please."
"Like this?"
"There. Now I think we just turn this and... good, that's it."
"And this will help him?"
"For now. It's hydrating him."
"And then he'll wake up?"
"Maybe. Captain..."
"Luca."
"Luca, then. At home I have a daughter. She is 13 years old, and right now she is wondering where I am."
"Not my concern, Doc. When the boy's well, then you can go."
"I don't understand why..."
"You don't need to understand. You just need to make him well enough to talk. Got it?"
With that, he pushed past me toward the door. "Luca?"
"What?"
"The boy. What's his name?"
"Marco. His name's Marco."
And then he was gone. Slowly, I sat down on the edge of Marco's narrow bed and stroked my fingers through his hair. All I could think about was Cassie and how much, oh God, how much I just wanted to hold her again. I had no idea what time it was. My watch said 4 o'clock, but that was Prometheus time, and I wasn't sure if it was day or night. I was exhausted. I was hungry by the time Eva returned with the water, and we bathed Marco's wound in silence. I'll sit with him now, she said, as I tidied away the dressings. Captain says you should eat with the crew tonight. She nodded toward the corridor. You turn left, then go right at the end. Can't miss the galley. It's where all the noise comes from. She smiled then, and I made her look younger still. Hungry, and yes, I admit, curious, I agreed to leave my patient in Eva's care for half an hour. Now that the boy was more stable, I needed to turn my attention to escape. I could almost hear Colonel O'Neill's voice in my ear. Intel, Frazier, gotta get some intel. Eating with the crew seemed like a good place to start. When I reached the galley, I was the last to arrive. The rest of the crew, perhaps 20 in total, sat at a long trestle table, several large pots dotted between them, and to my surprise, I saw at least a half a dozen children among them. This was a ship of families, it seemed.
Doctor, come and eat with us.
Luca got to his feet and shot a look at his crew, who, rather awkwardly, did the same. I hid a smile at their unexpected good manners and wondered why Luca would think it necessary. Call me Janet, I said, taking a seat by his side. He smiled, a rare glimpse of humor, and began to eat, dipping chunks of bread into a communal pot. Banishing thoughts of alien bacteria, I ate too. I was too hungry not to. It must be difficult, I said between mouthfuls, living aboard ship like this.
Difficult? Why?
Well, logistically, I mean, you know, carrying everything with you.
Ah, well, better than the alternative.
Which is what?
Having nothing to carry at all.
Well, I couldn't argue with that, and so we ate in silence for a while. Later, once we'd finished eating, he lounged back in his chair and regarded me with those cautious eyes of his.
Tell me about your girl. Does she look like you?
Cassie? No, she...
Amria!
Luca jumped to his feet as the door behind him opened and a harried-looking crewman darted into the room.
Do they know our position?
The crewman shook his head. It's a message, Captain, from the Lord Protector. The Lord Protector, I knew, was the head of government in Brasivia, Lamora's affluent southern continent. This could only be about my kidnapping. Okay, look, let me talk to him. He'll want to know I'm alive. Perhaps I can negotiate
it. It's nothing to do with you. Get back to the boy.
Lucas stalked from the room, but before he closed the door, I caught a glimpse of a view screen and communications equipment. I filed away that piece of information and turned to face the rest of the crew. They were exchanging wary glances. It was the first time I suspected they might doubt their captain. I finished my meal with the crew, but none of them would discuss their captain, my patient, or our current position. Despite their guarded nature, however, I could sense a genuine warmth between them, and I certainly didn't feel that my life was in danger. When the meal was finished, one of the men produced an instrument, a kind of, I don't know, guitar, I suppose, and began to strum softly for the children who'd gathered around to listen. It was a melancholy tune, and when I asked one of the women what it was, she just smiled and said, "It's Paramecha. It's from our home." "From Bellini?" I asked. She nodded, hefting one of the large pots from the table. "There's nothing for us there, so now we are here, doing what we must to feed our children." "You're exiles, then?" She smiled. "You have been to Bellini. Would you stay?" "Brasivia is more prosperous," I said. "There must be work there." The woman laughed, glancing around at her friends. "There must be work in Brasivia? What say you to that?" There was a chorus of cynicism, and the woman shook her head. "The likes of us are not welcome there," she said. "We're Caldari, you see. Wanderers. Vagabonds. A bad influence and a danger to their starched little children." She ruffled the hair of a scruffy boy who darted past her. "But don't pity us, Dr. Frazier. We're the freest people on Lamora." "Free?" I asked. "Is that why you're hiding from the Brasivian fleet? Is that why Marco can't be taken to a hospital?" Her expression cooled. "Freedom has its price," she said, turning to leave. "Perhaps it's one you've never been asked to pay." With that, she went about her business, and after a few moments, I left, making my way back to Marco's cabin. It was clear that I needed to take action if I wanted to escape. I knew the Prometheus must be close, but what I really needed, what I craved, was information. And so I waited, dozing on the little pellet they'd given me until the ship fell into a sleeping silence. And then I got to work. Slipping off my shoes, I padded out into the corridor. The ship was a labyrinth, but I knew where I wanted to go, into that communication room I'd glimpsed from the galley. If I could establish contact with the Prometheus, then perhaps I could figure out how to get myself and Marco off this ship. The ship's lights had been dimmed and the galley was dark as I crept inside. I paused, letting my vision adjust until I could see the communication room door. My heart was thundering. Should I just open it? What if someone was inside? Someone was coming. Darting away from the door, I slid under the table and held my breath. Two sets of feet entered from the corridor and I could hear Luca's voice.
Tell him he can't talk to the boy, but we can send him a vid stream. It'll show him he's alive and that'll have to be enough. We'll do it now. Get the old Choro out of bed.
They walked right past me and flung open the control room door. Golden light poured into the galley, but beneath the table I was still hidden. Inside the room I could see headphones and microphones. I was glad to see it seemed like fairly familiar technology. Lucas slumped into a chair and I thought he looked tired and anxious. He was my captor and I knew I shouldn't care, but there was just something about him. A kind of melancholy that touched me despite everything. On the wall of the comms room sat a gray rectangular device, and Lucas snatched a microphone from its side, tugging the wire around so he could talk into it from the chair.
Savannah to Intrepid. Savannah to Intrepid.
As he spoke, Luca reached lazily for the door and pushed it shut. I could hear no more. Cautiously, I crept from beneath the table and pressed my ear to the door. Luca was still talking, but his words were too muffled to make out. Afraid to push my luck further, I hurried out of the galley. The first thing I noticed when I woke up the next morning was Luca, sitting on the chair next to Marco's bed. The second thing I noticed was the gray rectangular box, a slender microphone attached to its side, fixed to the wall behind Luca's head. I'd not taken any notice before, but now I recognized it as a comms device and my heart raced. Quickly, I looked away, certain Luca would be able to see my plans forming. How does he seem?
I think he has more color. Perhaps he'll wake today.
But I knew the boy was no better, and I was increasingly worried about his head wound. I need more IV fluids. Do you have any? I need more bags, like the one on the stand.
I'll have someone check the hold. I know you think me callous, Janet, and I know...
Why do you want him to wake up?
What?
Yesterday, you said you needed him to be able to talk. Why?
I want him to recover.
Who is he, Luca?
He's just a Caldari, that's all.
His dark gaze gave nothing away, but I knew he was lying. His conversation in the comms room had been clear enough. He needed to prove that the boy was alive, which could only mean one thing. Marco was being held hostage. Bring me the fluids. Right now it's all I can do for him, but I am warning you, Captain. It is no way near enough. And really, I should have hated him for what he was doing to that child. I should have despised him, and yet there was just something heartbreaking in his eyes, and instead of rage, I felt an overwhelming sense of compassion. It wasn't until later that I understood why. I was left to myself for most of that day, which suited me fine. Gave me time to examine the comms device on the wall. Boy, did I wish I had Sam with me. But of course, I did in a way. I didn't know it, but she was out there doing her best to establish contact with me. The device on the wall had a frequency dial, but I had absolutely no idea if it had the capacity to communicate beyond the ship. Nonetheless, I had to try. My main concern was not alerting the attention of the Savarna's crew. Assuming that the device was currently set on an internal frequency, I turned the dial all the way to one end and hoped for the best. This is Dr. Janet Fraser of Stargate Command. I'm aboard the alien ship Savarna. Can anybody read me? Over. This is Dr. Fraser of Stargate Command. I'm aboard the alien ship Savarna. Can anybody read me? Over. This is Dr. Fraser of Stargate Command. I'm aboard the alien ship. This is Dr. Janet Fraser. Can you read me? Over.
Janet?
The voice was scratchy, difficult to hear.
Janet, do you read?
Sam, thank God. Yes, I read you. Over. I could hear her calling.
Sir, I've got her.
And then more clearly,
Janet, what is your position? Are you okay? Over.
I'm fine, I said. I'm being well treated, but I have a very sick child here. I need a medical evac.
Copy that, Janet,
said Sam.
Could you describe the child?
I glanced over at the boy. He's male, about 9 years old, black hair. His name is Marco. Sam, I think he's being held as some kind of hostage.
That would be an affirmative,
Sam said.
His name's Marco Patali. He's the grandson of Jan Patali, the Lord Protector of Brasivia. Janet, he was abducted from the family home 5 days ago.
Abducted from his home? I felt sick. I can only imagine the anguish of his parents, of his poor mother. I thought of Cassie and my heart almost broke. Understood, Sam. Tell his family that he is alive, but he has been wounded. I'm doing my best, but I don't have what I need to treat him effectively. It is imperative that I get him to a hospital without delay. There was a rustle on the other end of the radio, and then Colonel O'Neill's voice cut through the static.
Doc, this is crap,
O'Neill snapped.
We're gonna board the ship, we're gonna get the kid, and we're gonna kick these guys' butts to the other side of the goddamn planet. But to do that, we need your coordinates, and you need to get them for us.
Yes, sir, I said.
Do what you have to do, Doc,
O'Neill ordered.
We'll be monitoring this frequency.
He paused a moment.
And good luck.
In the silence that followed, I sat and watched Marco. His narrow, boyish chest rose and fell as if he were sleeping. But his face was just so pale, and all I could think about was how terrified he must have been when they took him. What kind of monster steals a child from his parents? I already knew the answer to that. The kind of monster who could look you in the eye and make you believe him incapable of such cruelty. A dangerous monster indeed. I avoided eating in the galley that night. I couldn't stand the thought of sharing a meal with people capable of this crime. But more than that, it gave me an excuse to head to the galley later when it was empty and try to get into the comms room. There, I hoped, I'd find the coordinates Colonel O'Neill needed. Unfortunately, even before I arrived, I could tell the galley wasn't empty. Luca was playing softly in the corner of the room. As I watched, one of the Savarna women walked past and touched his shoulder. He looked up and smiled, and something passed between them. An acknowledgement of shared sadness, perhaps. I couldn't reconcile the scene with what I now knew of Luca and his crew. How could they show such care for each other and yet be so cruel to Marco? It made me realize how easy it is to hate our enemies. And to hate our enemies' children.
Dr. Frazier, how's the boy?
Still alive, if that's what you mean.
He's not woken up then?
No. What if he had, Luca? What do you think he'd say to me if he woke up?
You look tired.
Spare me your concern.
And angry.
I've been kidnapped. Of course I'm angry. I want to go home, and I want to be with my daughter. Children need their parents, Luca.
You think I don't know that?
Then let me go. Let me contact the ship. Let me get the medical help.
I can't do that. You don't understand. You just...
Then explain. Tell me. Tell me why that child is lying there dying, and you won't let me help him.
He's not dying. Is he?
I don't know. Maybe.
Janet, please.
And suddenly he looked stricken. I told myself it was because his plan was failing, but somehow it didn't feel like that. I'll be honest. I am concerned. Luca, there is a kind of head wound. It's called a subdural hematoma. It can happen after a blow to the head. Bleeding inside the skull puts pressure on the brain that can be fatal unless there's surgical intervention. I don't know if that's why Marco's unconscious, but it could be. And unless I can find out and treat him... He was silent for a long time, staring at the floor. I couldn't see his face behind the fall of black hair.
If I give him up, they'll kill us all. If he wasn't aboard, they'd have blown the ship from the sky already.
Marco didn't ask to be here, Luca. Are you really going to sacrifice his life for your own?
There are children here, families. I can't... They're my people too, Janet. I have to think of them.
Perhaps you should have thought of them before you stole the child. And there it was. For better or worse, the truth laid out between us.
It wasn't meant to be this way.
I'm sure it wasn't. You were meant to just take your money and run, trade the child's life for a king's ransom, and never mind his terror or the agony of his parents.
That's what you think of me, then? I suppose you'd expect no better from a thieving Caldari. We're cheats and murderers, the lot of us. Scum of the world.
Marco's not the only captive here. I speak as I find, Captain.
Do you now? Do you think you know me, is that it? Do you think you see the whole picture from where you stand, Janet Frazier?
If I'm wrong, then prove it. Just let me take Marco to the Prometheus. Let me save his life.
At the cost of the 33 lives on this ship.
And that's when the idea came to me. That's when I saw the way out. All it would take was for me to play Luca at his own game, to indulge in a little minor deception to achieve my ends. The boy's life and my freedom were worth it, weren't they? There might be a way. There might be a way to save the boy and your crew.
How?
Give me your coordinates. I'll transmit them to the Prometheus, and they can transport Marco and myself aboard. The fleet will never know when he's healthy. Then you can trade him for your freedom.
You'd do that for us, would you? You'd deceive the fleet.
I'd do it for the boy if it's the only way to save his life. Luca considered it for a moment. I could see misgivings and doubt like shadows in his eyes. And then suddenly he smiled and held out a grubby hand.
We've got a deal then, Dr. Frazier.
I shook his hand and his fingers curled around mine with a pickpocket's touch. I couldn't shake the feeling I wasn't the only one playing games. Within a few minutes, we found ourselves in sickbay. Against the sterility of the Prometheus, Luca looked wild as he stood there, clasping Marco to his chest. Behind him, I could see SG-1 and a team of Marines waiting, their weapons drawn. If Luca turned around...
Put Marco here, on the bed.
Your ship's pretty impressive, Doc.
You should see the Stargate.
I'd like to, when this is over.
He smiled, but I could see his hand shaking where it lingered on Marco's chest. Over his shoulder, I met Colonel O'Neill's gaze. Step back, he seemed to be saying. We're going to take him now.
Perhaps you could show us the Stargate one day.
Yes, perhaps. But as I spoke, I stepped back, nodded to O'Neill and...
What the...
Get your hands in the air, Colonel O'Neill yelled. Carter, disarm him.
I'm not armed. You don't need to... Let go of me!
Teal'c was yanking Luca's arms behind his back, and I could hear the plastic zip of the cuffs binding his wrists. From the pocket of his coat, Sam retrieved two metallic bands and examined them curiously. I knew what they were, and I knew what he'd been planning. They're communicators, I told Sam. He was going to transport Marco back to the Savarna once he'd been treated.
You lied!
To save the boy.
I trusted you.
You kidnapped a child, Luca. Did you really think I could let you get away with that?
I had no choice.
O'Neill pushed himself between us, shoving Luca back against Teal'c. Can it? We're not interested. Teal'c, take him to the brig.
No, wait! Janet, listen!
Luca, it's over.
Don't send him back there! Janet, please!
It's over, Luca. Why can't you understand?
He's my son!
What?
Marco's my son.
I watched him as he struggled against Teal'c's grip. Colonel O'Neill's expression closed down entirely, and beneath her breath, I heard Sam mutter, Oh, boy.
How can I believe you? Luca, after all of this, how can I believe anything you say?
He stared at me in silence and had no answer. I spent the rest of the day trying to forget the look in Luca's eyes as Teal called him away. Luckily, my patient kept me busy. The MRI scan confirmed my fears. Marco was suffering from a subdural hematoma and required an emergency craniotomy. Brain surgery is hardly my field, but the SGC has taught me to be quick on my feet. Fortunately, it proved to be a textbook case, and I only needed to make a small hole in the boy's skull in order to open the dura. The bleeding had already stopped, and once I removed the clot, easing the pressure on his brain, I was confident that Marco would recover quickly. But later, as I stood watching him sleep, I realized that his head wound was really the least of his injuries. How did a child recover from an ordeal like this? Worse, if Luca was really the boy's father. Such tangled lives did more damage to a child than my hands could ever treat. A touch on my shoulder startled me from my thoughts. Janet? It was Sam. How's he doing?
He's doing okay, I told her. He's gonna be okay.
There was a pause, and then she said, And how about you?
Me? I'm fine. Like I told you, I wasn't mistreated.
Sam raised an eyebrow. You were abducted, Janet. Weren't you afraid? And you know what? I realized that I hadn't been. Not really.
Lucas people, I said, they're not... They're a gentle people, Sam. They play music and eat with their children. I think they just want to be left alone.
After a pause, Sam said, "You like him, don't you?" That was a question I didn't really want to answer. Instead, I said,
"What if he's telling the truth? What if he really is Marco's father?"
Sam's face fell, her hands diving deep into the pockets of her jacket. "Actually, that's kind of why I'm here." When she glanced up, there was trepidation in her eyes. "He is telling the truth, in a way." I stared.
"In a way?"
"Daniel's just been talking to Mr. Patali, the Lord Protector. He confirmed it, Janet. Luca Bayesh is Marco's father, but he's not seen the boy since he was a couple of years old. Marco's mother died when he was little, and since then he's been raised by his grandparents. Patali believes Luca's only interest in Marco is financial."
I looked away from her back to the sleeping child. I could see it now. I could see how his raven hair and milky skin mirrored his father, and I could trace something of Luca's rare smile in the boy's pale lips.
"You're right," I said quietly.
"I do like him. Doesn't make any sense, but I do."
Sam's hand touched my arm. "It doesn't always make sense, Janet." I took a deep breath, focusing on what mattered.
"I'm not sure we're getting the whole picture here, Sam. I just think I need to hear Luca's side of the story."
She nodded. "But you should know, Janet, Colonel O'Neill doesn't want the SGC involved in this. It's their business, not ours." I glanced back at Marco.
"Well, that's very convenient for us, isn't it?"
Her answer was a simple shrug. Luca was being held in a small cell in the brig, and he was on his feet the moment the door opened.
"What do you want?"
"I thought you might like to know how Marco's getting on."
"Did you know? And why would I care, do you think, if he's not my son?"
"You don't get to blame me for this, Luca. If you'd been honest from the outset..."
"My business is my business."
"And now it's my business." I nodded toward the guard at the door, dismissing him. I knew Luca would never talk to me with him there. The cell had room for a narrow bed and a single chair chained to the floor. I sat down and waited until Luca slumped onto the bed, his glare fixed on the wall behind my head.
"You should know. My people have contacted the fleet. The Lord Protector has confirmed your story, at least as far as confirming that you are Marco's father. He's doing well, by the way. I needed to operate to remove a clot from his brain, but he's recovering, and I'm confident he'll wake up soon."
"Expect me to thank you, do you? You'd have been better off letting him die."
"You don't mean that."
"Don't I?"
"No, not if you know anything about being a father."
"Tell me this, Janet Frazier. What do you know of seeing your child in another's hands? Of seeing him used against you? Turned against you?"
"More than you know, Luca. More than you can imagine."
He frowned at that, and I could almost see him closing in on himself. I knew that if I was to discover the truth, I needed him to trust me again.
"My daughter was taken from me once by a woman who wanted to hurt her and through her my whole world. I was desperate. I would have done absolutely anything to save her."
"Even kidnap?"
"Even murder. Tell me about your son. Tell me what happened."
Slowly at first, he began to talk. Eyes closed, head resting against the wall of the cell, he began to unravel his painful story.
"Marco's mother was... Do you know what it's like when you can see your whole life in someone else's eyes? The moment I met her, I knew. It was as if we'd always been together. Her father, of course, didn't approve. I was Caldari. Hardly an appropriate match for the daughter of the Lord Protector."
"He forbade your marriage?"
"He tried. Savannah wouldn't let him, though. She had a spirit like fire."
"Savarna. You named your ship for her."
"We lived aboard her for 6 years. She was our home. Marco was born there. And now the Savannah is all I have left of my wife."
"I'm sorry. How did she die?"
"In hospital. She fell ill and her father insisted we go back. She didn't want to go. She wanted to stay aboard ship, but I couldn't take the risk. I knew if she stayed, she'd die. And I couldn't... So we went. The three of us. 4 days later, Savannah died in my arms. And I thought... I remember thinking... There can be no worse pain than this. There can be no greater loss than this. And then they took my son. They took Marco. He was 5 years old. He just lost his mother. And I could hear him screaming for me. Screaming for his daddy. But there was nothing I could do. No law, no court. No recourse. Nothing. And so I waited. And I plotted. And a week ago I had my chance. I had my chance, Janet. And I took him. I took my son, and I won't give him back. I won't. He's my boy. We belong together.
Luca, why didn't you tell me?
What difference would it have made?
Every difference. I wouldn't have...
Betrayed me? Are you sure about that? The whole world thinks Marco's best left with his grandfather, not slumming it aboard a Caldari bark.
I'm not the whole world, Luca, and I wish you had trusted me.
I did, once. Look where that got me.
Well, if you'd told the truth, I'd have helped you.
So help me now. Get me out of here. Let me leave with my son.
It's not that simple. I can't just let you out. My superiors
would... Damn them! Who cares? Just open the door, Janet.
I can't. I'll talk to them, okay? I'll put your case to them, Luca.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll help.
It's the best I can do.
Is it?
I'm done in here.
If it were your daughter, is this the best you could do for her?
I'm sorry, Luca. It's out of my hands.
Is it? Or are you just washing them clean?
He stared at me until the door swung shut and the key turned. But I could feel his accusing eyes on my back all the way to the bridge. It's not going to happen, Janet. Jack O'Neill was in no mood to compromise. I knew the stubborn look in his eyes all too well.
But Marco is his son, sir. There must be something we can do.
The colonel glared, counting off points on his fingers. First, the kid's better off with his grandpa. Second, the guy kidnapped you, you and the kid, and therefore is definitely not on my good side. Third,
how do you know? I interrupted. Excuse me, Colonel, but how do you know that Marco is better off with his grandfather?
He looked at me the way he looks at men in suits. The kid's been kidnapped, shot, and had his skull cracked open. Where in the crazy alien guide to good parenting does that fit in?
Accidents happen, Colonel. You should know that better than anyone.
Well, I regretted that immediately. The silence that followed was ice cold as Colonel O'Neill turned away, stalking toward the window and gazing out at the stars. Felt like forever before Sam said, "The thing is, Janet, we have no right to intervene."
"I know,"
I said, keeping my eye on O'Neill and wondering if an apology would only make things worse.
"I just think we should give Luca a chance. Yes, he went about it the wrong way, but Marco is his son. Parents aren't always rational when it comes to their children."
From the window, his back still turned, O'Neill said, "We're not social workers, Doc. This isn't our problem, and we're not about to make enemies over it. God knows we have enough of those. As soon as he's well enough, the kid and his father are transporting back to the fleet. Their problem, let them deal with it." I didn't argue. There was no point. Sam offered me a sympathetic shrug and said, "Do you want me to tell Luca?" I shook my head. "No, I'll tell him. He at least deserves the right to say goodbye to his son. With your permission, sir?" O'Neill glanced over his shoulder and gave a slight nod. I decided to take that as a yes. I couldn't face Luca right away, so I detoured through sick bay. And that's when everything changed, because Marco's eyes were wide open and as clear and dark as his father's. Cautiously, I approached the bed.
"Hey,"
I said gently.
"There you are."
He blinked, confused and disoriented. His lips moved, but he didn't speak.
"You were hurt, Marco. You're in hospital. My name is Janet, and I'm a doctor. How are you feeling?"
"My leg," he said, so softly it was so difficult to make out. "My leg hurts."
"I know. It's getting better, but you were shot. Do you remember that?"
He nodded. And suddenly he jerked upright, panicked. "Daddy!"
"It's okay. It's okay, I told him, easing him gently down into the pillows. It's okay, your daddy's here. Do you want to see him? Marco nodded. We're going to live on his ship, he whispered. And I won't have to go back to school. I smiled and touched the boy's forehead. He was cool, the fever gone.
So, you don't like school, huh?
He shook his head.
Don't you have friends there?
I asked. Some, he said, but they always go home.
Oh, and you don't?
He shook his head again. I haven't got a home.
But your grandfather...
Marco frowned, confused. Oh, I live there sometimes, he said. I thought you meant... I thought... He was growing sleepy, his eyes heavy.
It's okay, I told him, stroking the hair from his forehead. I know what you mean. So you go to sleep now, okay, sweetheart? You sleep, Marco, and I'm going to go find your daddy.
But I didn't move. Not for a long time. I just sat there and watched the boy sleep.
Can you hear me? I want to see my son. You can't...
Sergeant Hansen, I have orders from Colonel O'Neill to take Captain Bayash to see his son.
I want to see my son.
Don't look so worried. I can handle him.
Let me out. I want to see my boy.
I want to see my son. You... Janet.
Marco's awake. He's asking for you.
He's awake? Oh, thank God.
He's going to be fine, Luca. Bringing him here, it was the right decision.
Was it now?
Come on, I'll take you to him.
Am I to say goodbye to him, Janet? Is that what this is?
I spoke to Colonel O'Neill. You have to understand that the priority of our mission is to forge good relations with your world and...
And this would get in the way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah? I don't care.
He's in there. Can you see? Just in that bed over there.
Oh, God. I can't do it. I promised him. I promised him we'd be together. I promised him he wouldn't have to go back. How can I... He's my son, Janet. He's all I have. How can I say goodbye to him? Don't make me say goodbye to him.
Luca. Luca, look at me.
What?
Hold out your arm.
What are you? My communicators.
I have an errand to run. I'll be back in 5 minutes. Do you understand?
Yes.
Marco, he needs plenty of rest. It'll be several weeks at least before he's fully recovered.
Janet.
5 minutes, Luca.
Wait. Why are you doing this?
Because I have a daughter. And because I nearly lost her once.
But... What will happen to you? They'll know you helped us.
Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. I might need a new job, but I'll be fine.
Come with us.
What?
Come with us. Leave this place. Leave all these petty rules and uniforms. Janet, we could go anywhere. Don't you see? The Savannah can take us anywhere. No limits, no roads. We can't travel.
And leave my daughter behind?
We'll find her. We'll bring her too.
No. No, these petty rules and uniforms, Luca, they're why I'm here. Every day I patch people up so they can go back out and put their lives on the line, fighting for me and my daughter. So don't you dare ask me to run away from the consequences of what I'm doing today. You buy the ticket, you take the ride. I'm not afraid.
You think me a coward, then?
I think you're a father who should be with his son. 5 minutes, Luca.
I've got no words. I wish... Thank you, Janet.
I've given you a chance, that's all. It's up to you not to waste it. The Savarna is gone. It slipped out beneath the notice of the fleet before anyone knew Luca and Marco were missing. And so here I am. In a holding cell, awaiting the verdict of the disciplinary hearing. I'm not sorry. I meant what I said to Luca. I am willing to face the consequences of my decision. It's just sitting here beneath the weight of the mountain, I find myself remembering his smile, and the promise of that endless road seems to glitter with the regret of things not done, paths not taken. It's Colonel O'Neill standing in the doorway, arms folded. His temper has receded, and I can see the good man beneath the military swagger.
Well, if you're hoping for a promotion in the next 50 years, he says, you've blown it. But you get to keep your job.
The wave of relief is unexpected and overwhelming.
Thank you, sir. I can't think of anything else to say.
After a pause, the colonel says, did you talk to the kid first? I tell him that I did, that Marco wanted to be with his father.
O'Neill nods. Good, he says.
And with that, he's gone. But I sit for a moment, gazing through the cell's open door, and it seems as if I can see forever. The future, bright as the stars, stretches out before me again. And I know that the very first thing that I am going to do is go home, and I am going to hold my daughter very, very tight.
We just recorded Savannah, which is the first audiobook with Janet Fraser for Stargate SG-1. What did you think when we first approached you to do these?
I was so excited. I was like, yay, Janet's alive and well and living in audio land. Yeah.
Did you ever think you were going to play the character again?
No, actually, when she was killed off, that's not a spoiler because everybody knows, right? But when she was killed off in season 7, I thought that was pretty much it. So to come back in season 9 was so great. It was just so nice to sort of get in her shoes again and be her again. So the same as today, it was like, wow, finding her rhythm, you know, finding her rhythm and, excuse me, her voice again. So it was fun. It was great.
So how do you go about that? Because you haven't played her for a few years now. So
it's been a few years. I don't know. How do I go about that? I guess I'm brilliant. No, kidding. It's just playing her for 7 years. And because I so loved that character, it just falls. Like, it's just easy. Again, you know, just sort of to feel her, and a lot of the dialogue, say, between her fellow characters like Sam and O'Neill, it just worked, the banter between the two.
Mm-hmm. And as far as audio drama as a whole goes, have you done that before?
No. I was saying that to Caroline, my agent. I said, now, what am I reading here? Like, is there going to be, I've done, you know, radio plays or and certainly lots of animation where there's a whole, you know, group of us who play together and tell the story. But this was good. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. So that means you have to do more, Sharon, okay, and keep Janet going. Okay, you're all my witnesses. You're all listening to this.
That means everyone has to buy them.
That's right. Buy, buy, buy like crazy.
So, yeah, how did you prepare for this script? I mean, this is Janet earlier, you know, a few years earlier than we last saw her. So how did you go about doing that?
Just, we discussed this earlier as well, just getting the script in advance and looking at it and finding the Fraserisms, finding, just going through it and getting that pace thing again and finding where she's at, because she has her own sort of rhythm with her walk and with her speech. So it was just basically going back into her skin, as it were.
Yeah. And it's a real swashbuckling tale for Janet Savannah. How did you find the script when you first read it?
I loved it because she's, you know, she's out there. She's doing something completely different. I mean, it was exciting. And I love the fact that she was really out there doing it basically on her own. I mean, obviously she had her team surrounded me, like helping her out, but it was her thing. And it was nice to have that sort of chemistry between her and Luca, you know, I like that.
Hmm. And, I mean, Janet, as we said, you haven't played her for a while now, and yet she still stayed with you, you still attend conventions, you still meet the fans.
Yeah.
What's it like to have a character that stays with you for that long?
An absolute gift. I think it's an absolute gift. And you know what? That's a really good point, Sharon. The fact that I am constantly still out there with the fans, I think that's what does keep her alive as well. Especially most recently, being in the UK, and just before that was in Australia. And I'm always amazed at the loyalty. I just love the sci-fi fans. They're so loyal and so supportive, and they continue to be, you know. I think it's them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on at the moment yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually working on two different series in which I have a recurring role, and they couldn't be more far removed from each other, these two characters. I'm working on a show for ABC Family. We're in our third season right now called Kyle XY, which is a lovely, you know, good, feel-good, moral-based story. So watch it. It's really quite good. Kyle XY, ABC Family, and also doing a Canadian series, which we're filming now our second season. It's one called The Guard, and it's on a local network here in Canada called Global. But I believe some people are getting it, or I don't know, maybe it's they're doing some no-no stuff to get it, but I've had some people in Australia and the UK say they love the show already, which of course made me go,
So do you think it's likely that it will get picked up for international broadcast, or?
That's what we're hoping.
Excellent.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool. Okay. So is that a bit more action-oriented for you then, if it's a...
The Guard?
Yeah.
It's not action-oriented. It's really not Janet Fraser at all. The character is Gwen Sullivan, who is an artist and a sculptress, very free-spirited. And to supplement her craft, her work, she runs a nudist camp 5 months of the year. Yeah, look at you laughing. I know.
I should just say we can hear our engineer listening in on this, and he's laughing in our headphones as well.
So there's things like, you know, butt shots. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, me and Dennis Franz, right? You know, NYPD Blue. There you go. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been
fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much.
Take care.